Okay, move out.
You're listening to the Valor Podcast with Nick Lehman, a show highlighting the people who defend the United States of America and those who support them.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Hello and welcome to the Valor Podcast. I am super excited about this episode. We'll be talking about a secret code, and after the show is over, we will all live to tell about it. First, I want to thank our show sponsor, the Gallup Comfort Inn and Suites in Gallup, New Mexico. They are a really great supporter to our show. One of the great things about their hotel lobby is it's full of military memorabilia and photos and facts about our United States military. So the long travel through the United States and want to put up your feet in a great small town, stop at Gallup, New Mexico, and visit the Comfort Inn and Suites. One of the most important things developed in World War II was a secret code, so top secret that nobody talked about it. The War Department and Marines formed the unit with Navajo speakers. They were called Code Talkers. Nearly 421 Navajos were trained by the Marines for this top secret mission. We are joined by one of them today, Mr. Thomas H. Begay. He was part of the 5th Marine Division, and Begay enlisted at the age of 16 and was honorably discharged from the United States Marine Corps, then went on to the U.S. Army. He was selected as one of the 33 Navajo Code Talkers to be assigned to the renowned 5th Marine Division Signal Company in the radio section of the H&S Company 27th Marines. Mr. Begay, it is a true honor, and thank you for joining us. Did you ever know that you were going to be a code talker?
Code talker, I did not know about the code talker. I joined the Marine to be an aerial gunner. And I was told by the Marine recruiter that, boy, I am just the man they're looking for, fitting one of those bubbles on the airplane shooting down the Japanese plane during the World War II. And I went for it until I finished a boot camp in 1943. I thought I was being sent to aerial gunnery school, and they sent me to Camp Pendleton. All I have orders just to report to billing number, something like 13 area or billing so-and-so. I went there, and here there were a whole bunch of Navajos that I didn't know none of them. They were there, and I told them that they sent me to the wrong place. I was supposed to go to air gunner school for, being aviation. The Sergeant Benali says, well, too bad, he says, this is a code talker school. I say, I don't know anything about code talker. I don't know Navajo. I wish to go to aerial gunner school. Well, he says, too bad. We need you. So we went round and round, and I had no choice. Refusing order is a court martial. So I had to try out, he says, we have a Navajo, we need you. There are a lot of dropout Navajos, but they can't comprehend the Navajo code talker. They use code to be used in the Marine Corps. It's a confidential and secret. So he says, I'll try. I'm going to give you 25 words, for you to review and tomorrow and the next tomorrow. By the end of the day, if you memorize those, he says, see what we can do. So he gave me a list of words, 25 words. It was easy for me because I knew Navajo. I grew up as a Navajo because I didn't start school until I was 13. I was well-versed in Navajo by the 13-year-old. I knew quite a bit of, you know, Navajo. That's all I talk. That's all we have, the language that I learned. So he tests me, and then I made a correct. So he stopped me out and said, we be on your own progression. Others will be in class. You go there, but I'll have you study the words, and I give you tests every day. So it was very simple for me to do that. It was, I don't know why, he looked at me like I'm a special person or something. So I completed a code talker. It was more or less than 200. That's all there was. Code was easy for me to learn a lot. You know, most words are related to birds and animals and so on, like sheep, letter S, goat with G, ant, bola chi, which is letter A. I go down the line.
You guys had a very top secret program that nobody knew about, and you just couldn't take home the study materials.
And the lesson that we had was check in books and destroy all the paper by the end of the day, and it was kept secret. It's a confidential, written stuff to be taken home. Everything's built in our mind and in our head. Memorize it, just like the medicine man memorizes all the songs and doing things for patients. It's a similar type of thing. So the Sergeant Benali said that 100 Navajo is about 30 or less dropout because it's complicated for them. And I don't understand why Navajo failed a code talker school. I can't believe it.
I know we had 421 Navajo code talkers in the Marines. Was it hard to get the positions filled?
I don't understand why Navajo failed a code talker school. I can't believe it. Here I come from out in the country, went through the system, memorized it, all in my head. It's pretty simple for me. So I was ready for combat by November and December, assigned to 5th Marine Division at the Code Talker School. And correspondents or writer or bar from interviewing any Navajos get a court-martial. There is a memorandum from Commanding General, Major General Keller Rocky. He put out a memo that no Navajo should be interview. So
was that hard to keep it a secret?
So I was never interviewed or never my picture taken. They can take my picture, but they don't say who, what, you know, what we're doing. We're just a Marine. And we had to learn radio. We also had to learn, some of us, Morse code. It was easy for me also. And when I was assigned to the unit, they made me a regular radio operator, CW, Morse code. It was easy for me too, so I had MOS, Military Occupation Special, you know, they call it MOS, as a regular CW operator. And also cryptographic, which is a decoding machine that they use international for Navy, Air Force, Army. We all use the same thing. Only thing is the machine decodes stuff if they know the key. So we had to learn also that. So I had 3 MOS and I did both, regular Morse code operator and also Navajo code talker.
What would be a code that the Navajo code talkers would give to Allied forces on the radio?
Code talker. It was more or less than 200. That's all there was. Code was easy for me to learn a lot, you know. Most words are related to birds and animals and so on, like sheep, letter S, goat with G, ant, bola chi, which is letter A. I go down the line. Letter J, telly chucky. A jackass, you know, and so on. It's kind of comical in some of the words that I see. So it was simple for me. So I finished boot camp in October and 5th Marine Division of this with V activated on November 1943. Chetarai, which means a turtle, is a tank. Belton Sana is artillery. Belton Sata is mortar. And then they use a rocket. At times, which was new on Iwo, we had to get a name for it. Like the eggs was a bomb, which sometimes they were bomb or like being in certain area that unexploded. And so they call it a yenji, which means aches. Yeah.
Mr. Begay, you had a really stressful job in getting the messages to everyone on the battlefield. How did that go?
Hey, Tucker. That means code talker. So they're on the radio and then they usually send messages. And there's no unnecessary transmission of any kind. You don't mess around with your radio frequencies or changing different frequencies. You stay on one and you do that you're supposed to. That's the order from the high up. And we have Captain Howard M. Conner was my commanding officer. And he is the one that he says, when we got together with 5th Division, he says, you're going to be the best coat talker in the United States Marine Corps, 5th Marine Division, he says. I'm a commanding officer, and he's responsible for all the communication equipment for each down the infantry and frequencies and what they can use and what they can't use. Another coat talker on the other end. So by that time, we also work on additional code, and we build a code up to 508. The content of the message is going to be in English, all in English, but you talk over the radio in the Navajo code. You don't have a book anywhere. It's just by memory. You read the message in all written in English, and you read it in Navajo code. So that's how it worked. It's kind of, well, that's the way it is, you know. It's top secret, confidential. You can't have a written Navajo quote, taco quote. It's not in Navajo. All in English, but you read it in Navajo quote. That's kind of funny, but that's the way it worked.
So one of the most important battles that you were part of was Iwo Jima. And on February 19th, 1945, that was the start of the invasion of Iwo Jima. You had a very, very important message to deliver on that day. What was that message?
Well, something like yesterday, D-Day, February 19th, 0900, was a D-Day on Iwo Jima. So we were all ready by 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning. D-Day was 0900. We hit the Green Beach, Red 1 and 2. That was assignment. Serpachi, and the next was a Red 1 and 2. So that was our assignment. So the message would be like, attack Iwo Jima on 0900, you say. Atachi jet, nazpas naste, nazpas nazpas. That would be the, you know, the message.
And that confused.
Iwo, like, you spell out Iwo. You can't slow in this chart. It says each. They call it glowing. It's a predator, like, you know, it's an animal. And then all. Well, the first 48 hours, we were sent close to 800 messages without a mistake, as our commanding officer said. That's one of the messages. I don't remember all, you know, it was so many things that happened. It was so scary. And we lost 2 Navajos the first day.
Mr. Begay, Iwo Jima was very important to you guys because of the military significance. What was it like on Iwo Jima, you know, both battling the enemy, the Japanese, and also just on the island fighting.
Now what happened, that was the biggest, the worst fight in the South Pacific in World War II. The worst and the bad one that South Pacific was Iwo Jima. They lost a lot of lives. You should see the beach body in the road. And then finally they got the sanitary fix. All they did is they put the ditch, put cover. Yep. Not individual business. The same, all one time, one shot. Body. They put those, just go over like a road grader. So it was a nice sanitary. So we have a couple of Navajos there, 5th Division.
Yeah.
We only lost two, yeah. Did some shooting. How they got there, I don't understand. I don't really know how. I guess they went through the caves and came up to the airfield and killed some pilots, did some shooting. That's war is war, I guess anything goes. So anyway, to capture that was, it means something to us, because how long are you going to fight, at least you did the job.
Yeah.
You got 750 miles or so from Tokyo. And they have three airfields, I think. Airfield number one, Moriyama, number two, and number one. Another one, small one, I think they fixed it up. Boy, they had like a country, nice airfield. They had Air Force, you know how.
Oh, yeah.
Fixed it like downtown. So I spent 38 days there, and one hot meal. The rest of the time I live out of Kang.
By the end of the campaign, there were over 5,900 Americans killed and over 17,000 wounded. But one of the most iconic photographs came out of that was the raising of the flag on Mount Suribachi. That's one of my favorite photos. A Associated Press photographer, Joe Rosenthal, took that photo, and it really has stood the stand of time. What was it like being there?
The first flag raising was 5 Marine at 10:30. That one is Arahes and Corman Navy Marines at 12:30. It was right across from us, right by the airfield number one. That's where we had our command, 27 Marine. And it's up, just go look up that 550 feet or so. You can see up there. And they raised that flag. I watched it. War, everybody yell. Well, they so happy. Secured that big rugged rock, Suribachi, Mount Suribachi. Yeah. They put out the color, that big flag. So that means secure. One, the purpose of the catching the, at all costs, I guess, imagine, is that they save a lot of money, saving pilot and big B-29 flying to Tokyo dropping bombs in Japan. Coming back, in fact, during the fighting, not too long after we landed, one landed on airfield number one right above our command post. One of the B-29 crippled landed safe. And so they saved the crew. Also, you know, the life of pilot is very important, because to save money, to save people, get it over with. So I guess that's why we invaded Iwo Jima at all costs.
Wow, that is amazing that you only had one hot meal during that whole entire invasion. Mr. Begay, you went on to serve our country in the Army and in the Korean War, participating in other major battles. Did you use the same skills that you had? You got out of the military but decided to still serve our country in the Bureau of Indian Affairs as a government worker. You struggled with the same things as transitioning veterans do with what to do next. You know, take us through that.
The bodies were hanging out like this and all, and burning. Boy, you could smell that for 6 months. It gets into your clothes. I had a radio team with Ford Observer. All I do is follow an elderly captain, vice message. I said, follow me. Even there's guns shooting, you just follow them. So they make a report. That's all I did, is follow Ford Observer. Sometimes I come in the radio team, sometimes they disappear, they get captured, I guess. One day, one of my buddies, I saw his name in POW camp. He was a chief radio operator like I was. We went to North Korea. Wonsan, North Korea after that, and then all the way to Chosin Reservoir. That's where the cold came in. We barely got out of there. I was left behind. They told me, there's a colonel said, put his hand right here. Son, he said, you're going to stay behind. You're going to be captured. Sent all your good stuff to you, gave it to your buddy, let him sit at home. So you stay here, you know what to do, he says. Just pick one guy for you to help you. I pick one guy up. Oh, he was scared. How come he picked me? Well, I said, you're a good man. You and I are good people. Say, why don't you pick somebody else? So, well, already pick you. Yeah, the colonel told him to pick a man to stay with you. He was only about less than a handful of communication people, North Korea, Park Chan. But we escaped, made it to Hamnan, caught a boat, went back to South Korea.
Mr. Begay, you went on to serve our country in the Army and in the Korean War, participating in other major battles. Did you use the same skills that you had?
20 years later, I heard that it was still secret. See, what happened after I left the services, I went back to school 1 year. And I got stuck in California, no job, no nothing, no money. Job, looking for a job, my long line. I didn't have no money, so I joined the army, re-enlisted as a paratrooper because they get extra money, jump pay, you know. I went through jump school, glider school. This is a glider wing, you say, yeah. Parachute wing, yeah. So I went back in 1947. And I stayed in until I left. I had a good job in the military. State fit station operator. It's like working civilian shift. You're on duty so many hours and you get off. I learned that. So I re-enlisted the army, and I did the same kind of job because I had an aptitude. They test me. They want me to go for interceptor school for 1 year, but I said, no, I already go to jump school, get it going. But when I got into a unit, 11th Airborne, Japan, I was a fixed station radio operator. It's like civilian. I worked with our headquarters, where the officer, one of the major, used to say, hey, son, take my Jeep, pick up some donuts for my coffee. So I go and jump in the Jeep and get his donut. That's the kind of job, easy job.
You got out of the military but decided to still serve our country in the Bureau of Indian Affairs as a government worker. You struggled with the same things as transitioning veterans do with what to do next. Take us through that.
Oh, that's after that, my family said, no, you're not going nowhere. I have no skill except radio. Unemployed. But there was a job that the lowest in the barrel, the government, GS-2. It's GS-1, 2, 3, 4, all the way to about 15, 18, I don't know.
I was reading somewhere that this code that the Navajo Code Talkers developed and implemented for the Marines was very top secret, and it wasn't until like the 70s that you guys got to figure out that you could talk about it. So tell me how that went to keep it from your family and friends and other people around you.
I didn't tell my wife or my kids because they told us, you know. It's you're a government agent one time, and you're not allowed to reveal what you did. So that's just, you know, just normal life. They were doing something at the fairground at Window Rock. They're having telephone. Then I recognized some of the code talkers. Hey, he says, I know that guy, Jimmy Keene. He's a code talker. Then my kids, my wife, start asking questions. You? Well, I said, I won. So we just swing into the group. Then I met a lot of code talkers there, some I didn't know. So they learned that I was a code talker. Then they got the organization. They got it going and recognized. And then I worked with 1970-80, I worked with Eldon Rudd, congressman, Northern Arizona, where I used to work at Chin Ling, federal government. I met with him and I told him, sir, I said, well, I see a lot to see Kurt Tucker recognized by the federal government. I said, we got all the notes, everything. You can get all the information. He said, yeah, very interesting. I'll pursue that, he says. Get you guys recognized. He got Senator DeConcini, Goldwater, Senator Cannon from Nevada, the Minichi. They wrote up. He did all the information, everything, recognizing all the Navajo Kurt Tucker. They had documentation. We had a cookbook proven. So Ronald Reagan is the one that passed the unanimous the bill recognizing Navajo Kurt Tucker. Then the tribe went, oh, whoa, they all, you know, happy. So he's the one that did that, Eldon Rudd, Arizona congressman, young guy.
Lastly, I want to hear, what does it mean to be a veteran?
A veteran means that you fought for your country, for yourself, your family, and the nation. And you sacrifice either you lose your life or come home. I'm happy that I still have my life. I've been in 6 major battles during World War II and Korean War.
Mr. Begay, thank you for that answer, and that was truly a wonderful conversation that I am glad that you had time to share on the Valor Podcast. Thanks for listening to the Valor Podcast. Make sure to like us on Facebook, and you can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play or any podcast management app. Visit our webpage at thevalorpodcast.com. That's thevalorpodcast.com. Finally, find your mission. There are many veteran organizations, nonprofits, and veterans needing your help. I promise you'll make some great friends. Have a great week.